What's up, everybody? Chef Marcus Samuelson here with Jason Diakite, and we are This Moment. Today, we have a very special guest, Frans Johansson. Frans Johansson is really a genius. Diversity is something that he has devoted his whole life to. Very often, the conversation around race and diversity is a little muted in Sweden.
It is that Swedes believe that they're more advanced in understanding others than they actually are.
There it is. Shut it down.
There it is. Thank you for laying it on us, friends.
You need strong voices and that are super bright. They can actually unpack the why and the how. He links the must of diversity, the complexity of diversity. But he also has a great window into America and the world because he's traveled. He does this for major companies. He does this for governments. The world is really his work field. And then started his own company with his wife, Sweet Joy, right here in New York. Medici Effect, the book, is a classic at this point that every company and every person that wants to understand the impact of diversity should really read. So today, on This Moment, the one and only Mr. Frans Johansson.
This Moment.
This Moment.
You know, as I've been telling Marcus many times, like a measure of success as a rapper in Sweden is that when you perform in Gothenburg, is your hotel in Gothenburg or is it outside of Gothenburg? So for many, many years, if we knew that we were not being kind of like respected by the venue, that's when they put us at a hotel in Leiden, you know? We'd be like, but wait a minute, technically, we're not in Gothenburg, but we're supposed to be performing there. Take us back, Frans. How was it? You know, you came up in Lerum, put me there. I've only been there and been disappointed because I didn't get a hotel in town, you know. How was it growing up there?
I always make this joke when I start my speeches, which I have this pie chart. And it says that the label of it is Sweden's demographics at the time when I grew up. Mm. And you have this whole chart, basically, that's blue. And it goes, these are the blonde, blue-eyed, and quiet reserved. That's this. And then there's a tiny, tiny, tiny sliver. And it goes, me. So now, when I grew up in Lerum, that was how it felt like. With the exception of my sister and my mom, there were essentially no other people of color. There were maybe one or two kids that were adopted from Korea, but you know it was that was about it. It was very it was obvious that was the case. So I think that informed me. But there are wonderful things about Leo. I mean, you got nature all over the place. My dad had fishing was in his blood. So it enabled me to go fishing. We went out to the ocean. Gothenburg was right by the ocean. We went out fishing. I went into streams, rivers, lakes. Nature was a big part of how I grew up. And Leon was a perfect place for that. But in some ways, it got me connected to that. But it also made me extremely aware of that I was different.
But you grew up with a white Swedish dad and an African-American mom in a small town outside of Gothenburg. What was your, I mean, I'm the son of immigrants. You know, a lot of my, you know, I was in Swedish society when I was in school and when I was outside of my parents' homes. But when I came home, I was in an immigrant home. So I got to see Sweden through their lens. How did your mom feel about like Sweden and her life in Sweden?
It's about everything. I mean, are you kidding me? Yeah. Like, why are Swedes doing it this way or that way or this way? Over time, obviously, you know, things fell into place for her. You know, she started loving herring. Mm. I mean, it took a while. But, you know, these are some of those things that fell into place. But I will say this. One, she was vigilant about looking for signs of racism. I had an event that happened when I was in elementary school, where a teacher didn't want to give me a particular type of book, because I wasn't, didn't feel like I was intellectually ready for it. And my mother went to town. She's like, I know what this is. Are you telling me that Francis is not ready for this book? Are you shitting me? Like, and she made sure that happened. I don't know if she was ever, she never felt like she became a Swede, but she did feel that she became, that she understood what it meant to live in Sweden and be part of that society and be part of a family like that.
Yeah. I mean, Franz, when I hear that, right, first of all, Jason, you know that, but we got to explain it for our listeners. So Lerum, if you take the bullet train from Stockholm, you know, Lerum is something that you just swish by, right? Yeah, and it's about 25 minutes outside Gothenburg.
30 seconds.
And the other thing that you just swing by, which is the neighboring little suburb, is my home suburb, which is Patile.
Oh, yeah. Patile, so we know about it. You know, that's
so we're right next to each other. Yeah. And so here we have these two black Swedes, but also Franz and I, growing up at the same time, but Franz and I could not also have two different experiences. Franz is tall, light-skinned. I'm short and dark-skinned. But also, I am that adopted kid that Franz was just talking about. So both with you, Jason, and with Franz, blackness does not mean, of course, that we have one experience about being black. That is the nuance.
No, I mean, one thing, and I think your work definitely attests to that, Franz, is that one unique thing about hip-hop culture in Sweden is that the group of Swedes, you know, and most Swedes know that you're either a Swedish or you're invandrare. And if you're invandrare, which means immigrant, but it also means non-European and it often means non-white, you know, you could be from Turkey, Cote d'Ivoire, Ethiopia, South Korea, Iran. So, and since hip-hop became the language of the youth that had been othered, that meant that there's this unique mix going on. Like Swedish hip hop slang is a mixture of Arabic words, Turkish words, you know, Somali words. It's really this mix. You don't have the segmentation that you have in the United States, where you really have enough people from each separate culture and country to make up their own neighborhoods. In Sweden, everybody was just put into one kind of big pot and stirred around, you know. Well, I wouldn't say I love it about Sweden, but it gives Swedish, at least Swedish, you know, non-European culture, this kind of unique blend of all these different cultures.
I think that's right. I mean, but it's also something, even within that, though, you can still see Europeans. I mean, like,
absolutely.
I mean, Marcus, you were talking about the actual sort of darkness of your skin. I mean, I still think that applies as a proxy. Yes, you can be an immigrant, and that has all kinds of things associated with it. But just like in most countries, there's still some Swedes will like to kind of rank that as well. Maybe it's implicit, but I do think that skin color is sort of connected to that as well.
This moment.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
But you two must have had the similar experience, because my name is Jason Diakite, and it was, I would always stop people before they got to my last name just to spare myself and them the whole going through them trying to pronounce it. But if you, and I have friends that have, you know, Swedish sounding names, just like the both of you, Marcus Samuelsson, Frans Johansson. How many times, Frans, have you had the experience where you call up, you're speaking perfect Swedish, good at speaking and communicating, and then when you show up, there's the shock that, like, okay, we didn't realize we were talking to a foreigner. Like, what
okay,
happened?
I'm going to give you one story. I published my book, okay, The Medici Effect, mm-hmm. my first book. I had been invited to give a speech at, actually, at one of the factories that Nobel, Alfred Nobel created. So outside of and I was coming in there in a cab, and it was a lot of VIPs, and there's a, you know, there's a guard or what do you call it? Like a doorman, security guard. And I'm saying, well, I have to get in. And he goes, no, there's no way. Well, I'm the keynote speaker. No. My name's Frans Johansson. So note at this point, he hadn't asked me what my name was.
No, he just knew you weren't the one. He knew you weren't the one, man. This is so not the dude.
As for that guy, the guy I don't have forgiveness for is the teacher in school, right? Because first of all, you know, Frans and his sister, Sandra, they're the most educated, intellectual, smart, brightest. Like, you cannot reach higher education and intelligentsia than Frans. Mm. I'm telling you, Frans went to Brown undergrad and then to Harvard, right? Like, as a Swedish kid to do this, do you understand how fucking bright you have to be to navigate through this?
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
And then he wrote, you tell your story about the Harvard Review and all of that.
What I figured out in Sweden was that if you were able to bring together elements from different cultures, then you'd be more powerful. This is one of these things that hit me. You had to find some sort of way of combining it. And then I went to college. And I studied environmental science, and I realized that the same kind of principle held true across disciplines and industries and functions. What happens if you bring together biology and geology and physics and economics? And so I started thinking about whether or not these sort of processes were similar. And then I had a few other things going on. I started a company, a healthcare company, that was based on my aunt's research. I had this crazy life, because not only did my mom grow up in Sweden, she had a sister who also married a Swedish guy, and they lived in Hovås.
Oh wow!
Okay, I see you.
Imagine, right? I mean, those sisters, they both had white.
They had a lot to talk about. Each other going through that.
Yeah. But she was the first Black female tenure professor at Johns Hopkins. And we started our first company based off of Harvard. After that, I went to business school at Harvard. And I started another company. It was a software company at this point, together with my cousin. So all throughout this time, it became obvious to me that if you were able to really tap into diversity, then you had a better shot at being creative and innovative. Like, this seemed at this point crystal. And I realized nobody had actually really taken this on to study it specifically. So one morning, it came to me like a flash in the morning. I woke up and I had this idea of this book called The Medici Effect. And what that book really explored is the idea that diversity drives innovation. Mm-hmm. That when you're able to bring together, when you step into an intersection, different cultures and industries and fields, you have a better shot of breaking the ground.
I think innovation, diversity, and thinking different is in your core, and maybe it comes from your mom and dad, or maybe it's a combination of, you know, to graduate Harvard BA, a very normal path would have been like to be a consultant for McKinsey or something like that. But you just said, and even when you were in school, you started two companies, but you said, no, I'm going out on my own. And being on top of your class and all of those different things. I know you had offers, but so right there for me, there are so many left turns that you've taken that are super American to me, the core of being American. But then also, I know there's a lot of decisions you make that are actually part of being Swedish, your love for nature, fishing. So how does these ideas come to you? Why didn't you take that job at McKinsey, for example?
So there's a couple of guiding lights. My dad gave me one piece of advice, which seems simple, but it's hard to actually pursue. It's like, look, in the choice between doing what you love and money, go for do what you love. Okay. Now, and to give you a sense of what the inspiration of that was, my dad loved to do two things, to write and to go fishing. And so he created a fishing magazine called Fiske Kunona. I took a job between the first and second year of my MBA program at Harvard. And that job was with a consulting firm. It was in London. And I had one rule, which was that whatever money I made during that summer, I had to spend. I had to spend it. And the reason why was because I wanted to see the money ever make up for it.
I love it.
It was a test. It was a genuine test.
Can the money? And how did it go? You must have had a great summer, but
I did have a great summer, but I also came to a great answer. I knew that for me, anyway, it couldn't.
Wow.
So, okay. And then you know, once I went back to finish my MBA, I actually left. I started a software company and I left that for a couple of years. And then I came back for my final semester. But at that point, I knew that this idea that I had that morning around diversity and innovation, I went to sleep thinking about it. I woke up thinking about it. That week, I started dating the woman that ended up being my wife.
Miss Sweet George, you can't just say that. You got to give her a shout out. She would kill you if you didn't feel like that.
I just spent hours talking about this idea. I don't know if it was the best approach to dating, but I couldn't stop it. I'm like, this was going on. Fortunately, she was along the same lines. So Marcus, I did it because I had to. Why? Because I had to. When it comes to the Swedish pieces, they've always been part of me. But I think ultimately, it's the way that I find balance. So, you know, this idea of nature, of fishing, and also this notion of roots, right? Mm-hmm. So much of who I am that is American, but the place we grew up in matters in a different way. Do you know what I'm saying? Like it's, there's memories, smells, sounds. Mm-hmm. So every time I come back to Sweden, it's a way to sort of replenish those roots.
Hearing you talk about imagining, you know, what growing up in Lerum meant, and as you were talking about earlier, the closeness to nature and so forth, you have two daughters. They're growing up in New York City, which is like really, as far as cities compare, is it's like the diametrical opposite of Lerum, right? Where you grew up and where they're growing up is so totally different. And even as far as like the diversity that's around them and so forth. How do you see that impacting them?
We think it's important to go back to Sweden. We try to do that once or twice a year so they can get those pieces in. We also go to my Sweet Joy is Filipino-American. So we make sure that we spend time with both families. It's very important to us. It has to do with their roots, has to do with values and so on. But I mean, you know, they are so much further ahead and to think in the intuition of all these things that we've just been talking about as a function of growing up in New York. I mean, it's no comparison. The way they are interacting with who their friends are, what they're doing. Like, it's not just a different city. It's a different era. I mean, like we're able to do with an era. Like it's like night and day. But even so, I think that understanding our roots, understanding where we come from matters a lot.
One thing I think that is really interesting, and I want to evolve on this on diversity, right? So even within your own family, you are European American, African American, Asian American within your own family. And your Sweet Joys and your beautiful two daughters, they are now going to grow up with an Asian American and African American vice president, which is exactly the same identity that they have. Mm. And for them to be able to like see this, I just think this is puts, have you guys had a chance even to talk about that or?
For Sweet and Me, this is momentous. Them, it's another day. It's like, oh, yeah. Well, we had Obama, then we had Trump, and now we have like they've grown up during an era where Obama was the norm. I mean, that was president.
Yeah.
And so this is in some ways getting back to the norm. Like if you think about it from their perspective of it. Now, as they get older and older and a little more about history and so on, I can put things in historical context. I think that gets added into it. But the intuition is one where I think Sweet Joy and myself are more aware and celebratory of this fact than they are.
I mean, I also see it as so hopeful because I really think about, you know, from the time I was 7 years old, how I quickly adapted to and started internalizing the fact that my multiracial, multicultural, multi-ethnic background was a burden and or an obstacle and not wealth, right? And for the past 3 decades, I've been in the process of decolonizing my mind from those old ideas that had such an impact when I was a kid. And I probably will spend the rest of my life decolonizing those norms that just leaked into my kind of spine at an early age. Whereas you look at, you know, your daughters, France, your son, Marcus, and my daughter growing up where at least they won't have to do that, right? That's already, like you say, for them, it's just another day. Like, of course, we have a vice president who's African-American, Asian-American, and of course, Black women can be VPs and hopefully also presidents very soon. But that we are like, and we, if I feel like I have to remind myself of this, that we are also making progress, especially today when it seems so often like we're backsliding and forgetting so much. And, you know, but we are making progress.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Franz, can you explain for us how, I mean, you work with government, you work with companies about diversity. What would be a 3-minute pitch about the cure for diversity for Sweden? And what would be a cure and a suggestion for diversity for America? Because I always said,
Yep.
Are you making
give
it
us
easy?
The cure. Give us the cure, France.
You know,
bring us the cure.
Let's start with Sweden. Okay. What do I see as the most fundamental issue in Sweden? It is that Swedes believe that they're more advanced in understanding others than they actually
are. Boyka, boyka, boyka. There it is. Shut it down.
There it is.
Thank you
for laying it on us, France. Yep.
The podcast is over. We shut it down. That's it.
Boom. We got it.
You can't really address an issue until you acknowledge that you have the issue.
Mm-hmm.
But Swedes, on average, tends to be quite prideful and they are about this issue. They believe that they are very advanced, that they are ahead of it. They are open and they are inclusive. And what's really happening is something else. It's sort of this mechanical opening. Yeah, we want to invite people into our country. Yeah. Once that has happened, though, if you guys can stay right over there, and then I have to go try to, like, this idea that this then impacts how I am doing my work, or my life, is far removed. And so to me, the first issue when it comes to Swedish organizations is to highlight the challenges that these organizations are facing, recognizing it. There are employees, leaders today. I work with them. I work with Swedish CEOs. Mm. I work with Swedish organizations. And they are stunned when they start to have an understanding of just how far behind they are on this issue. They felt that they were not only knew what the issue was, but that they were ahead of it. So number one issue in Sweden is to basically get particularly Swedish leaders up to speed and awareness of that there's so much more work left to be done. Don't pat yourself on the back. Don't pat yourself on the shoulder. Discrimination, effectively, is playing out in subtle ways everywhere throughout this country.
One thing that I see a lot in Sweden is that Swedes very much want to be, they want to be hip. They want to be at the forefront of progressive thinking and so forth.
Absolutely.
It's a part of the national identity. So a lot of big companies, I worked at Swedish Radio, for example, for 12 years, you know, they did the diversity training days and then that's almost used as an alibi for not having to actually have to hire people from different cultures, backgrounds, sexual orientations, religions.
Couldn't agree with
it's like
you more.
We're still going to keep it all white, but we've all done diversity training, so we're really woke as far as being open.
We got it. I think that this is, you know, go to any agency, like ad agency in Sweden, and take a look at who is in, who is represented there. And it's going to be a very homogeneous group. Mostly white folks, and the dudes are probably wearing a beard. And so that's how that kind of plays out. So that's for Sweden, Marcus. The ability to highlight that there's so much work to be done. Now, what I will say is that I think Swedes are, generally speaking, up for it. They don't want to be in a place where one is feeling like one can't do as much as possible. I would say in general, not to say there aren't a lot of exceptions to that. And so I think that one can make progress. I am optimistic in this.
So what's the cure for the U.S. right now? 3 minutes. We need it.
I'm going to hone in on one that has snuck up on us. Okay, that most people don't really talk about that much yet. But it's become clear over the past year or two that this is a real thing. And that has to do with what artificial intelligence is actually doing when it comes to this specific issue. AI is step by step making the world less eager to pursue diversity. I mean, technology has enabled us to pursue it. We're actually able today to connect with almost anybody on the planet if we wanted to. But what is really happening is that on an individual level and on a team level, we are seeing the opposite. So on an individual level, it's about sort of narrowing your options, narrowing what you're exposed to, narrowing your inputs, narrowing your perspectives. And we have that goes on Facebook and YouTube and other social media where the algorithms basically are trying to identify what you like and narrow that. Yeah. Same on a team level. There's a lot of talk today about how AI can help us sort of avoid bias in recruiting talent, for instance. But what is really happening when companies employ AI for recruiting? What AI is doing is looking at data, past data, to say, who was a great employee? And how do we get more of that person? But this great employee is based off of, you know, the past 10 years of data. And that's biased. Because this company was not a model place for diversity, equity, inclusion in those past 10 years. So what's actually happening is that you're reinforcing the past narrative. These are, and it's sneaky. It sneaks up on you, right? So it's one thing if you can confront something that happens in society and workplace when it's out in the open, because at least you can recognize it, you can process it. But here, this is sneaking up on you. This is like the choices you make, one video from the next, the choices you make in terms of who you should be hiring, who passes through the resume filters. And so what do we need to do? Well, we need to do all the other stuff that we could talk about, but we really have to be actually really focused on AI, because AI is seeping into every single thing that we do, and the ability to counteract that force that is slowly, incrementally, step by step, making us less diverse.
I mean, we've definitely seen it. I totally can see where that is heading now that I hear you explain it, Franz. I mean, you look at the silofication of ideas that followed in the wake of the whole world more or less being logged on to Facebook, and the kind of how very strange and untrue or directly false narratives gain enormous traction, like QAnon, for example, and how they can then flourish in this kind of monocultural spaces on the internet, you know. But it's really scary to hear you talk about. So when we're building this new intelligence, that we are actually injecting it with the same bias that we also carry.
That's right. It's
inevitable in a way.
Past, and then it tries to sort of emulate that. Tries to say, well, what works, and we're gonna keep on doing more of it. I mean, I'm generalizing here, but that to a large extent is what it's doing. The past was not optimized for innovation. The past was not optimized for justice. The past was not optimized for equity. Certainly not for diversity and inclusion.
This moment.
Members of Congress want to award the Congressional Gold Medal to Eugene Goodman. He is the U.S. Capitol police officer who lured the rioters away from the unguarded chambers, allowing members of Congress time to evacuate. Officer Goodman was not the only one.
This conversation has been amazing, but it's also one of the first conversations we've had without even mentioning COVID. But for me, there are silent heroes, heroes that you might see in the news and then they go by. I want to shout out the police officer inside the Capitol that really he was shouted at. He was called all the different words that we all been called. He had to back up to get, you know, really to get backup and protection. But that gentleman, you know, really held the Capitol together when the unrest and the looters came into the Capitol, right? That for me, I hope he gets a medal. I hope he gets in a, you know, really that we take time out to look at these local heroes. I can't even put it in a word, but just watching him backpedaling. It is, and as three black people, we can all say lightly, we all know what would have happened if that would have been 30,000 Muslims, 30,000 black people. Mm-hmm. But for me, where the diversity training goes back to you, Franz, is because when I went to the March for Black Lives Matters in Harlem, and it started at the government building, you couldn't get into the government building. No, you couldn't even not. Like, yeah. The barriers
were. You can't even get close to policing. The building.
And that was to a peaceful rally. So when I look at the structure that they had, right there, it's based on the police is us and you work for us and we are you. And also we know at this point there are a lot of police officers were part of planning that. And that is my point. When the lack of diversity comes into institutions that's supposed to protect. So who they see the enemy or the frenemy or the friend or that cousin is completely different. And the next day, look at all the black people that have to clean up that mess, right? You've seen the images. And it's going to sear with us. Yeah. It's going to be with us. Yeah, so Franz, like, just give us a little bit of your thoughts on this very dire moment.
So look, long term. Big picture, I am extremely hopeful. The arrow of history, in my opinion, is pointing in only one direction, which is that long-term, we are becoming more diverse, we're becoming more inclusive, cultures are coming together, connecting, and so on. So that's long-term. But at any given time, there are reversals to this trend. We're in that now. I talked earlier in this conversation about AI driving that, but we're in this, the other driving forces as well. Politicians, leaders, those that choose not to step up or do some part in it, not every part, but something. That will lead to a short, medium term reversal of these things. What do I think is happening now? How do I feel about what is happening now? I feel this is a specific moment in history. It's reminiscent of moments in other countries. You know, people have made all kinds of comparisons to Germany, but you could see this in other places as well. The thing about it is, ultimately, they can't sustain themselves in the long term. Okay, so like in the end, it didn't work out well for Germany and the Nazis. And over time, you see that play out in other parts around the world as well. But I would much prefer that we don't have short-term reversals as well. That we have to lean in, and we have to do what we can in big or small ways to counteract this. I think it's dangerous right now. I really do. I think we're in a dangerous place in the United States, and not just the United States. The United States is in many ways a guiding light for leaders all over the world. They're looking at this and going, oh, wow, I didn't know one could do that. What would happen if we did that here? I saw an article in a Swedish newspaper the other day that something similar would happen in Sweden. It's like a joke. There's no way. But you know what people have said in Sweden year after year, election after election? It is that a party like the Sweden Democrats would have no traction. Apparently it did. Oh, wait a minute. It grew even more. Mm-hmm. Like, instead of being behind the curve,
yeah,
it's helpful to
you need to get in front of it. Yeah.
Be in front of it. And I think this is important, not just in the United States. It's going to be important everywhere.
Mm. I mean, the United States is also, I mean, it's the biggest cultural force on the globe, but the takeaways are not just the beauties of the United States, but also the ugly parts become playbook for similar groups, similar thinkers in Sweden, in Germany, in Holland, you know.
And so to me, it's an important moment. We have to reverse this reversal so we can actually get on to what the long-term track is.
Beautiful. Frans Johansson, thank you for blessing us with your beautiful mind and thoughts and lerum partile in one conversation for me is just, it's beautiful, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for coming up.
It's one of the most fun conversations I've had in so long. My God.
Yeah, I find a lot of inspiration from Frans. And when I don't know about something, it's very often I just call Frans because he knows about so many different things. And we had this great moment when I was super nervous and I was about to meet Desmond Tutu. And I had a question for Dr. Desmond, Mr. Desmond Tutu. And I was like, who can I bring to that conversation that is, you know, smart enough that can hang? My friends at that time, this was 15 years ago. I was like, I can't bring my friends to that. And I was like, well, Frans. So, of course, Frans was with Mr. Doctor and Desmond Tutu. And the first thing Desmond Tutu says, oh, I've been to Sweden. Let's have a shot. So we had a shot of aquavit and the ice was broken. And Frans had all the right answers. And I got my forward to my book. So, yeah, I bring Frans to those high closing dinners. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.